Welcome to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. Utah resident and personal trainer Drew Manning had never been overweight. His idea of a treat was an extra glass of spinach shake. But he often failed to help his clients reach their goals. Worried about that, he decided he needed to better understand what it was like to be in their shoes. His audacious plan: gain 60 pounds in 6 months and then take the weight off again in the following 6 months. That's exactly what he did. He let himself go, he stopped exercising, and started eating the typical American diet. He ended up gaining 75 pounds. Then he took the weight off again, all the while blogging to a growing community following his efforts. Drew Manning details how the experience affected him and his family, how he changed as a trainer and as a man. In his new book, Fit to Fat to Fit, the unexpected lessons from gaining and losing 75 pounds on purpose. Welcome to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. Very pleased to welcome to the program a Utah resident and personal trainer. And he's been getting a lot of publicity with his blog and book now, Fit to Fat to Fit. The unexpected lessons from gaining and losing 75 pounds on purpose. Drew Manning lives with his wife and two children in the Salt Lake City area. A personal trainer decided to better empathize with his clients to embark on this audacious scheme of, I think the goal was, what, 50 pounds or so?
50 to 60, maybe.
50 to 60. So on purpose over 6 months and then take that weight
right
back off. That was the plan, right?
Yeah, yeah.
The book is now out, his experiences, and I believe he did gain some empathy, some understanding from his clients, which he now uses in his work. There's an event this afternoon at 5 o'clock at Barnes & Noble in Sandy, 10160 South State Street, Barnes & Noble in Sandy, 5 o'clock, talk and signing with Drew Manning. Drew Manning, welcome
Thanks.
To the program.
Thanks for having me on, Tom. I appreciate it.
So tell me a bit about your life growing up. Were you an athlete? You write in the book that this sort of came naturally to you. You were fit. I guess you weren't tempted by all those other foods that many of us are tempted by.
Yeah, I mean, I grew up always fit. I did grow up an athlete. I grew up in a family of 11, so we were all pretty active, playing football and wrestling most of my life, and I never had a struggle with my weight, and became a personal trainer. And I looked at fitness as very black and white back then. Either you chose to be healthy or you chose not to be healthy. And pretty much there were no excuses. You know, it was a matter of willpower. But when I was training clients, I felt like there was a disconnect where I would get frustrated when I wouldn't see them doing what I wanted them to do. And that's where this idea of fit to fat to fit came from, is I felt like I needed to learn something, and I felt like maybe my clients were right, that I didn't understand what it was like. And so I decided to embark on this kind of crazy journey of stopping exercising, which I knew would be hard for me because I was obsessed with working out and staying fit. And so I knew that would be challenging for me, but it was something that I needed to do to better understand for myself what it was like for me to be overweight.
Did you, Perth, I want you to talk a bit about James, who you write
sure.
about in the book. But before that, once this word got out, did you hear from fellow personal trainers who said, this is just craziness?
Yeah, some wrote in. They did say it was crazy. Some thought it was inspiring. And that's the thing, is I got mostly positive feedback from it. Most people found it inspiring. Some found it, you know, not so inspiring and didn't like the idea. And I don't blame them for thinking that way, because it is a little bit out there. But I figured it was just crazy enough to where it would catch people's attention. But my hope was that it would inspire people and motivate them to not do what I was doing to my body and to live a healthier lifestyle. And so that was my goal going into it, my hope.
And your wife, this
yeah.
is a very important person in your life. What was her initial reaction?
She obviously thought it was crazy when I first told her, because she didn't think I could do it. She's like, you can't go 2 or 3 days, you know, if you don't go to the gym without complaining about how you feel. So she didn't think I could do it at first. But when I explained the logic behind it and how I wanted to inspire people, she was supportive of it. And then I had to tell my family, of course. But yeah, from the beginning, she was supportive. 6 months into it, that's a different story. Mm-hmm. We'll have to talk about that later.
We'll get to that. Chapter 4 is written by your wife.
Yes, her perspective.
And very frankly, I might add, she's very open.
She was pretty honest
Pretty honest about it.
Yeah.
So we'll talk about that. But James, this was sort of a catalyst. You write about him in the book. He's a relative.
Your brother-in-law.
And so you got to see him at parties and such. And so this was an interesting perspective, not just in the gym. So tell us about this.
James was a brother-in-law. Definitely overweight, obese, 340 to 350 pounds, you know, definitely had some weight issues. And he asked me to come train him. And this was one of the examples of where I felt like I needed to learn something, because he was doing good at first and then the results stopped. And he admitted that he wasn't eating the foods that I told him to eat. And he admitted that he was, you know, eating the foods that he shouldn't be eating and drinking soda. And he said it was too hard. And he said, you know, I didn't understand. And the truth is, I didn't. I just tried to push him harder in the gym and try to motivate him more by telling him, don't eat those foods. And so that's the thing that I didn't understand was, for me, it was so easy to be in shape. It was like, just exercise and eat right. And that's it. And that's why I needed to better understand.
So for you, it's your attitude, I guess, was it's a decision. I can decide to be fit, and I'll do it.
Yeah.
But obviously, some of your clients, James is an example.
Yeah.
He really wanted to. He was motivated.
Exactly.
In fact, he had medical issues. He was getting to the point where he really had to lose weight.
Yeah.
But it was very, very hard for him.
Yes.
That just wasn't connecting, I guess, to you.
Exactly. That wasn't connecting to me where, you know, to me it came down to a choice. And yes, it is a choice, but I didn't understand the mental and emotional aspect of it, the whole psychological side of it. And that's kind of why I decided this, in hopes to better understand. And luckily for me, I felt like through this whole experience, I gained that better understanding that I needed for myself. And I don't want to say I know what it's like for someone that's been overweight like James for years or even decades for some people. There's no way I could even pretend to know what that's like. For me, doing this for 6 months gave me the better understanding I needed. Even if I did it for a couple of years, it still wouldn't be the same. So I just want to get that across so people don't think that, now I know everything.
So you became a personal trainer, sort of working with friends and family, right? And then it was a part-time thing. You were a medical technician.
Yeah.
Still a medical technician when you took on this challenge?
I was up until a few months ago. Yeah. So I quit that job and to pursue the website and the book full-time.
Yeah. And so what was the attraction? What's the thrill of being a personal trainer then?
It was something I was passionate about and something that I knew and I understood. And I felt like I could share that with people, and I wanted to inspire them to live healthier. And that was the motivation behind becoming a personal trainer, is because I really had that desire to help. And that's where that spark came from.
Hmm. And you write about you'd walk in the gym, and let me see if I wrote it down correctly here, that you realized that you were the picture of what your clients wanted to be. But you also came with judgments that a lot of people had about why are you still fat? Why can't you overcome this?
Yeah, I think, you know, and I'm not judging other people, but I think a lot of people who have never struggled with their weight or cravings or addictions, it's hard for them to look at someone that's overweight and you see them eating something unhealthy and say, you know, just don't eat that food. It's that easy. But for me and for people like that, we look at it that way, but I didn't understand the mental and emotional attachment to things like food addiction or how to overcome lack of motivation or plateaus. When people start a diet, they hit a plateau and they go back. So, I felt like I was that type of person.
And as a trainer, I know you write that you would use several different strategies. You try to get through to people, but very disappointed. I imagine from a personal trainer standpoint, many trainers would be personally disappointed when your client plateaus or stops or quits or doesn't make progress.
Yeah, I think back then I focused more on the physical, you know, pushing them in the gym, telling them to exercise more, exercise harder, and pushing them to eat the right foods. And that's what I focused on. I thought that was the key, was if you eat right and you exercise, you'll see results. But it's a whole different story mentally and emotionally that I didn't get until I did this journey of fit to fat to fit.
And in fact, James made good progress.
Yeah, in the beginning he
did. For a while. And then he sort of plateaued. And, you know, sort of fell off the wagon kind of thing, as many people would do.
Yep.
You took it kind of personally and would go home and complain to your wife, right?
Yeah, I would, because that's the thing is with James, I would see him at family parties, mm-hmm. birthdays, and get-togethers. And I would see him eat those foods that I know he shouldn't eat. And I was trying to be a good example by not eating those foods in front of him. And it was frustrating to see him eat those foods in front of me when I'm trying to tell him and trying to train him to become healthier. And so, yeah, it did become frustrating. And we've talked about this, you know, now that I'm not training him anymore and the book's complete. But, you know, it was pretty interesting because, you know, I was frustrated. And that was just one of the examples, not just James's story, but a combination of other clients, similar situations, that I felt like I needed a change, a better mm-hmm. understanding.
Now this, and you do write that this is something that a lot of people would find crazy, especially fellow personal trainers.
You're
really going to put on 50, 60 pounds and take it off? But this was important to you to gain that empathy.
Yes, exactly. Like I said, I don't blame anyone for thinking it's crazy. But yeah, I felt like it was something that I needed to do. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it was hard for me in the beginning, going into it, not exercising. But at the same time, it was fun, eating whatever I wanted for the first time and whenever I wanted to. It was kind of nice to have that freedom at first. Mm. But then you quickly realize after eating those foods and not exercising how bad you start to feel because of those foods and how simple things that used to be now become hard and difficult. And the biggest surprise was the mental and emotional toll it took on me, my wife, and, you know, me as a father as well.
Hmm. If you just joined us, we are talking with Drew Manning. He's a Utah resident, a now full-time personal trainer, and has a website, a blog with the same title as the book. And the book is newly out, Fit to Fat to Fit, The Unexpected Lessons from Gaining and Losing 75 Pounds on Purpose. And along with Drew Manning's personal experience in the back of the book, the last third of the book is recipes, meal plans, exercises. Mm-hmm. So you want this to be a resource for people.
Yes, exactly. And on my website, there's meal plans and exercises. I wanted people to join me when I started losing the weight, which is why on my website and in the book, I listed specific meal plans. I listed specific workouts, grocery lists, and to get people to join me as I started losing the weight rather than focus solely on me and me losing the weight. I wanted other people to do it with me so we could do it together. That was the motivation behind that.
Hmm. There's a an event coming up. That's this afternoon at 5 o'clock at Barnes & Noble in Sandy. And Drew Manning will be giving a talk and doing book signings there. That's 5 o'clock, the Sandy Barnes & Noble. The book is Fit to Fat to Fit. The author is Drew Manning. So let's move to the fat part in the middle. Your journey from fit to fat.
Uh-huh.
You've decided to do this. You've told your wife and your family. I think you put it out there, right, in your website and blog, hoping that people would join you on this journey.
Yeah.
But you're a guy who, for whom a treat is an extra glass of the spinach shake, right? Is that right? So just one
exactly.
day to the next, you just stop eating healthy and you start eating unhealthy? How'd that happen?
I went to the grocery store, stocked up on all the nice treats, you know, convenient foods that they have there, mostly boxed cereals and sodas and frozen burritos and frozen pizzas and white breads and white pastas and granola bars and juices. And I wanted to focus mainly on typical American foods rather than doing a Super Size Me style where I ate just fast food. I wanted to focus on the everyday foods that we buy at the grocery store that are cheap, convenient, and they're tasty. So that's what I ate most of the time during those 6 months, which I attribute to my 75-pound weight gain.
Hmm. How did you start seeing weight gain immediately?
Immediately. The first week I gained 12 pounds, which is mostly water weight, but still, it came on pretty quickly, and I think it surprised me, but also other people, because people thought that I was, because of genetics, was in shape, and that I didn't have to work out or eat healthy, but they quickly saw by how quickly I got out of shape that wasn't the case, and that those foods, those highly processed foods that we are so addicted to here in America, they saw the damage that it did to my body physically. But the real story is where it affected me mentally and emotionally.
Mm-hmm. And you write in the book, in fact, the book opens with a picture of you getting out of bed.
Yes.
And you write that it's a lot harder to get out of bed now with that extra weight. And telling to me, I think this is a strike chord with many of us. You didn't look in the mirror.
Yeah.
You do your morning routine out of range of the mirror. So it begins to affect your esteem, mm-hmm. right? Self-esteem.
Yeah.
It does begin to affect you mentally and emotionally.
It did very quickly. Hmm. That at that point in the book where I started out was probably, 3-4 months into it, when there was a noticeable difference. Obviously for me, I felt different. The first week I felt like I was already overweight and I felt very self-conscious right away. But 3-5 months into it, yeah, I didn't look in the mirror as much. I did cover up in front of my wife even because I became that self-conscious. Out in public, I felt very self-conscious. I felt judged by others, and it was good for me to be on the other side of it for the first time. And that's where the biggest surprise was that psychological aspect and how it affected me and my relationship with my wife. And that's the biggest thing I took away from this whole this whole journey.
You write about going to restaurants.
Yes.
The waiter looks you up and down in a judgmental fashion, right?
The restaurants, grocery stores. For example, when I would check out, I had a grocery cart full of cereal and soda and granola bars and snacks and cookies and things like that. And to see people look at my groceries and look at my stomach and back and forth, maybe it was just me thinking they were looking at me, judging me, but I felt judged. Inside, I wanted to say, hey, look, I'm just doing this as an experiment. I'm not really this way. I wanted to so bad because of that person I was before, always been the fit guy out mm-hmm. in public. But I didn't say anything, and it was good for me to be on the other side of the judgment, where I'll admit I probably was more of the judgmental person before because I didn't understand people's situation. And now being on the other side of it, I understand for myself mm-hmm. what it's like now for me, not for others, of course, but...
Chapter 4 is written by your wife. How did that decision come about? You wanted to have her perspective.
Yeah, I think, honestly, the editor, people have always wanted Lynn's perspective. They sometimes ask her more questions than they ask me, like, mm-hmm. what was it like for you? Because she's skinny, she's fit, but what's most interesting is she's a foodie. She balances our marriage because I'm more of the health nut, and she's more of the foodie. But the surprising thing is that she actually became healthier because of this journey. And the editor really wanted her perspective in this book because so many, not just women, but people want to know what it was like for her as the fit spouse with an unfit spouse in the household and how it affected our marriage and our parenting. And so she wrote a very honest chapter, which I'm sure you've read, about how it was for her. And it wasn't just the physical things that she was unattracted to, because she's dated overweight guys in the past and she never had a problem with it. It was because of my lack of self-confidence and how it affected me, my energy levels, my laziness became an issue, not helping out with the kids as much, not helping out around the house as much. I just didn't have that energy I used to have. And so it was because of those things that she became less attracted to me rather than the big gut and the love handles and things like that, where people would assume since she's the fit person, that's all that she would care about. But really, it came down to who I was, how my personality changed.
Hmm. If you just joined us, we're talking with Drew Manning. He is author of Fit to Fat to Fit, The Unexpected Lessons from Gaining and Losing 75 Pounds on Purpose. Drew Manning, on purpose, set out to gain 50 or 60 pounds, ended up overachieving, gaining 75 pounds, and then took it off in order to gain more empathy for his clients as a personal trainer. We're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, perspective from Drew Manning's wife. We'll talk about what it was like for him to be an overweight person, and then how he took it all off and lessons that we can gain from all that. Back after this.
Steve Eaton is a freelance writer who lives in Logan. He writes a column that appears in the Deseret News every other Saturday.
When I got up last Saturday morning, I didn't know I needed a toaster oven with a built-in television. That's one of the beauties of going to garage sales. They help you identify deep needs you never realized were there. Because we are poor, we always go to garage sales with a noble objective, intent on getting a bargain on something we would just be buying anyway. For example, we might go looking for an electric can opener, a weed eater, a $4 Bose stereo system, or a gallon of milk. Often, however, we buy items just because it's wise to do so. For example, I once purchased a small portable generator that we can use in case we ever lose power. The way it works, I learned, is if your power goes out, you plug it in overnight, charge it up, and the next day you can turn it on. Fully charged, it will make a loud generator noise for a good 20 minutes. It sounds a lot like a Harley without a muffler. This generator doesn't do much besides make the noise, but if a big storm hits, we'll be making a racket while our unprepared neighbors sit in silence. There are other things you buy just because you know you're staring at a once-in-a-lifetime deal that might never come your way again. For example, I once went to a sale where I discovered they were selling large, heavy, battleship desks with locking drawers for only $3. Of course, I purchased one and borrowed my father's pickup to get it home. The desk proved so heavy in my father's small Toyota pickup that as I drove home, I'm not sure the front wheels were actually touching the ground all the time, which can be problematic if you need to turn a corner. It was on that long and frightening trip home that I realized I had no room for the desk in my house. It slowly dawned on me that I would have to put it at the head of our driveway outside, which I think would be a cool spot for a desk, until it rained for the first time. However, those were just details. The important thing was that I had nabbed a great deal on a monstrous desk and saved wear and tear on my dad's front tires all at the same time. I often buy cassette tapes at garage sales. For example, in a recent batch, I discovered a tape called Successful Elk Calling. The tape promises to help with grunting and barks. Who hasn't needed a bit of help with their grunts and barks at some point in their life? Occasionally, when rich people open their neighborhoods for yard sales, you come across people you can tell have never been to a yard sale before. For starters, they don't know there's a state law that requires every garage sale to be offering up at least one piece of exercise equipment. Their items are carefully folded, displayed, and tagged. They might be offering a sweater that was originally $60 for just $50. They always have this confused and offended look on their face as people walk away laughing. I never hold my own garage sales because I fear drive-by rejection. That's when somebody pulls up to your house, looks over your splendid display of treasures, and then just drives away without even getting out of their car. It's humiliating. I wonder if they would do the same if they were looking at a Klingon garage sale. I'll bet not. If you've watched Star Trek, you know that Klingons have a strong sense of family honor. You turn your nose up at a Klingon garage sale, and one of them will probably track you down and kill you for the insult. Garage sales are a frontier explored only by those with vision and tenacity. If that's not you, you should stop by some Saturday. We'll eat toast, watch TV, bark and grunt a bit, and then go off in search of a weed eater. You don't know what you're missing. This is Steve Eaton.
We're back with Drew Manning. He's our guest for the hour on Access Utah, author of Fit to Fat to Fit, The Unexpected Lessons from Gaining and Losing 75 Pounds on Purpose. Drew Manning at the time was a part-time personal trainer, medical technician in his full-time job, and was frustrated by a lack of understanding, as he felt it, on the behalf of his clients. And so he decided to take a journey of empathy. And so he did that. Of course, you may have seen him on the Dr. Oz show or a lot of other national outlets, and I'm sure Drew Manning, once again, there's quite a bit of interest in this project now that the book is out. There's a book signing and talk by Drew Manning this afternoon at 5 o'clock, the Barnes & Noble in Sandy. So I want to continue with your wife. Chapter 4 is written by your wife, Lynn.
Yeah.
And she writes very openly, very frankly, as you were saying before the break,
yeah,
that it wasn't so much your physical shape now, because she had dated a lot of men and of all different shapes and sizes, but it was your energy level. It was your your personality sort of changed.
Yeah.
She writes that you get into sort of one-upsmanship on who has it harder, and you kind of turned into whining a little bit.
Yes,
all of which I'm sure was less attractive to her.
Exactly. She'll say that I became, in a way, more of a woman because of the way I complained about the way clothes fit me, asking her if this made me look fat, those kinds of things. I mean, that's how much it affected me, being someone that had always known being in shape to being overweight all of a sudden. I didn't know how to deal with it. emotionally. And so I was very self-conscious, even in front of her. Like I said, I would, stepping out of the shower, I would purposely cover up in front of her because I didn't want her to see me. And, you know, she'll go into it, intimacy in the book. And she's very frank about how it was and how it affected our sex life. Because that's honest. I mean, that's what people want to know. And that's, it really did have play a role in how it changed our intimacy levels. So it was, you know, it was very honest. I think a lot of women, or not just a lot of women, a lot of spouses who have an overweight spouse will be able to relate to kind of what she's going through. That's not just about the physical. Mm-hmm. It's about how they look at themselves, their lack of self-confidence. And yeah, when I had energy, when I was in shape, I would help out with the kids. I had the energy to do, you know, chores around the house. And it's not that I became a deadbeat and I didn't do anything. It's just I didn't have the energy to do as much as I did before. So she noticed that, and that's why it affected our relationship the way it did. Mm-hmm. Even though I was doing this to myself on purpose for only 6 months, we knew it was temporary, it still affected us on a psychological level.
Mm-hmm. There's a scene that really stands out in her chapter where you ask her to rub some anti-stretch lotion on your belly. I guess it's grown that fast, right?
Yes. I was worried about getting stretch marks.
Yeah.
Obviously, you know, I didn't want any long-term effects from this, but at the same time, you know, I asked her to do that once. I didn't ask her to do that every day. But I would do weekly food challenges where usually on our date nights, on Saturday nights, instead of going out on a date, we would go to a restaurant where I would do a food challenge because for entertainment purposes, I would want people to come back to my website weekly to watch me attempt these man versus food style food challenges. And so that would be our date night. We would go to a restaurant, do the challenge. She would film me. We'd come back home. I'd be in pain for the next 5 hours. And those were unfortunately our date nights. So I feel bad for her having to put up with that. And then one or maybe two times asked her to rub some lotion on my stomach just because, you know, I was worried about getting stretch marks. Mm-hmm. Truth be told, I do have a little bit on my love handle area, which you can't see on the radio, of course, but they're battle wounds, and I you know, and am not ashamed of them now, having gone through this experience, and I'm okay with them. They remind me of what I went through and what I learned from this whole journey.
Hmm. Mm-hmm. I wonder what's the reaction been from? I see maybe some people overweight, mm-hmm. perhaps being tempted to take offense,
yeah,
saying, you know, he's just dabbling in my world. Mm-hmm. You know, he did gain 75 pounds, but it was on purpose. He took it back off again. Maybe he's not going through the same struggles that I am.
Yeah, that's true. Honestly, there's been so much good response, positive response from this, from overweight people, skinny people, fit people. It doesn't matter. There's been so much positive feedback. And there's literally thousands of people all over the world who saw this as inspiring. And I don't blame someone for being offended because the truth is I don't know what it's like for everybody that's been overweight. Yes, I only did this for 6 months, but I did it for me to have a better understanding for myself. And from the beginning, I never said I want to know what it's like for everybody that's overweight, because there's no way I could. So I don't blame someone. But if they really look at my blog posts and my videos and read my story, I think they'll really understand where I'm coming from. And they'll see it as a positive, especially the fact that people were inspired and they joined me on the journey back to becoming fit. And they lost weight because they weren't a fit trainer 6 months ago like I was. And I did have an advantage when I was losing the weight. But if you see the pictures of the success stories on my Facebook page or on my website, you'll see that those people who were overweight for years, they were able to become healthier and live a healthier lifestyle because of this. And so because of that, I have no regrets. And I'm not ashamed or, you know, despite the craziness of this, I am very proud that those people were able to make a true lifestyle change. And that's really what the story is all about. Not so much me getting back in shape. It's more about those people who did it with me that didn't have the advantages I did.
In fact, I was looking at your blog.
Yes.
FitToFatToFit.com is the website, and then you get the blog from there. And let's see. There's a recent blog from VPhil.
Yes.
I'm not sure. From Iceland.
Iceland, yes.
Who was inspired.
Yeah.
And it sounds like he lost a bunch of weight, and,
yeah,
and now he's more active. In fact, he's going to go paragliding. That's his ambition now.
His new ambition, yeah.
So that must be very gratifying to have people who are inspired by this.
That's one of many stories. And, you know, there's a lady who's 62 years old, a widow from Idaho, and she had an amazing transformation story. And that's what I wanted to focus on, is spotlight them and their successes, rather than, hey, look at me, I got back in shape, you can have a body like mine if you follow my program too. That's not what I'm trying to say. It's, I would love for people to focus on those people, like V. Phil from Iceland or Sue from Idaho. There's hundreds of them. So,
Now you say that you went into this, the fit to fat portion.
Yeah.
Unprepared, didn't have a plan.
Totally.
Of course, you know, I'd be with you. You don't really need a plan, right? Most of us don't to go that direction.
Yeah.
You compared that to your preparation for fatherhood, which I found very amusing in the book. Your wife went out and bought all the books.
Yeah.
You thought, I'll learn on the fly.
Yeah.
Until you got that newborn in your arms, and then you thought, I wish I'd read all the books.
That's true.
So looking back, do you wish you had prepared more for that part of the journey?
Yeah, I wish I did. But at the same time, I think because I didn't, I was able to learn things that I didn't think I would learn. Like when I became a father, I didn't read the books. I just kind of did it on the fly, and I made mistakes along the way, and I was unprepared for some things. But I feel like I'm better prepared now. So when my second child came along, I knew from experience rather than just from books. And so going into this, I thought it was just going to be a physical transformation. I would gain the weight and then I would lose it. And I was definitely unprepared for the mental and emotional challenges that came with gaining the weight. But now that I've lived that and gone through that experience, I now realize that that's the key, because I lived it, is that it's not just about the physical. It's about the mental and emotional and overcoming those challenges. And that's how you make this program a lifestyle rather than just another diet. If you focus only on the physical things, the meal plans, the exercises, things like that, that will get you results. That'll get you so far. But if you're not prepared for the mental and emotional challenges that come with it, like mental plateaus and not having a support system, it's going to make it that much harder to make it a lifestyle rather than just another diet that's out there.
I want to focus on the healthy versus unhealthy. You know, we focus on the weight that we have, mm-hmm. or how we look, or the fitness. But really, and you knew this better than most of us as a personal trainer going mm-hmm. into this, that you were really going to be going from healthy to unhealthy.
Yes.
And you write, there's an appearance on the Dr. Oz show near sort of the end of this. In fact, you're a week away or something from moving to a fat fit.
Yes.
And your wife maybe worries even more than you do about this, about how unhealthy you're becoming. I wonder if you talk a bit about how unhealthy a lot of us are with our weight.
Yeah, for example, when I was on the Dr. Oz show, that was really eye-opening to me, because from a physical perspective, I could see what was happening to my body physically as I was gaining the weight. But seeing what it was doing to my organs was a whole nother story, and that was very eye-opening for me. I had a doctor monitor me throughout this journey as well, and he said that my kidneys became like those of an alcoholic because of the amount of soda I was drinking. I don't drink alcohol, but because of the amount of soda I was drinking, it did the same type of damage to my organs as if I was an alcoholic. And I thought that was very scary. My blood pressure got up to 167 over 113 at one point, so very high. Very unhealthy from a medical perspective, and being on the Dr. Oz show, things like that were very eye-opening to me, and it did become worrisome as I became that big, because it made me realize that being healthy isn't just about being skinny or having a six-pack. You can be skinny or you can lose weight and be medically unhealthy if you're doing it the wrong way. So what I take from all this is that I now get people to focus on becoming medically healthy first, and weight and the beach body, things like that, will be a byproduct of living that lifestyle over time. But the most important thing is becoming medically healthy first. And that's the most important thing, because just like I said, just because someone's skinny doesn't mean they're healthy. And you can be overweight and exercise and eat healthy and still be medically healthy. But that's the most important thing, is that you'll feel great and you'll be able to do the everyday things that you want to do. It's not just about losing weight. I think we have the Biggest Loser mentality from watching TV shows about how quickly someone can lose weight, and we compare ourselves to that and think, oh, well, I should lose 10 pounds this week, you know, like they do. But that's not the case. That doesn't mean they're becoming healthier just by losing weight.
I was going to ask you about the Biggest Loser. Do you think that's a net plus for people or negative?
At the end of the day, it's a plus. I think people are inspired by it, honestly. There's people that are inspired by it. The contestants on the show, it's a life-changing experience for them. But the issue is the whole mentality of it is lose as much weight as quick as possible. And I think that's the problem is when they go back home to real life, they understand how hard it is without the camp or the trainers. And with real life, I mean, they have to know how to prepare for a lifestyle change rather than just a diet that they're on when they're on the show. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, it's a positive. You know, I'm not going to say that that's a bad thing, of course, because we're all, you know, we all want to fight obesity. Mm-hmm. But the main thing is to focus on medical health more than just weight loss.
Part of the show that I kind of giggle at on a weekly basis is the dramatic moment when the trainer sits down to have a heart-to-heart mm-hmm. talk and get to the root cause of why the person is obese. And of course, this is all telescoped, and mm-hmm. hours and hours of footage is telescoped. And you get the breakthrough, and everybody cries. And and so, you know, I think, well, where's your psychology degree? And but on the other hand, you know, it does highlight the fact that this isn't just physical. This is emotional, mental. It's all tied up together.
It is. And yes, it's not just the physical. And, you know, I think that's the thing that I would change now. People say, well, how would you change as a trainer now having gone through this? And I wouldn't focus only on the physical, which is pushing them in the gym harder or saying eat this and not that. I would focus more on the mental and emotional issues and teaching them how to overcome those issues, because that's the key to making it a lifestyle, is to help them overcome those things. You can teach them the physical, the meal plans and the exercises, and they'll learn that, and that will be essential. But the biggest part to make it a lifestyle is those mental and emotional issues. So I don't think you need a psychology degree. I don't think you need that kind of background, but I do think each person is different, and if you can help them overcome the psychology aspect, I think that'll benefit them in the long run rather mm-hmm. than tell them how to exercise and tell them what to eat.
Mm-hmm. Do you find that how important is that? Is that just as important as the physical exercises you're putting them through to? Is that something you try to get to know them, try to help them with the emotional and mental part of it?
Yeah, I would say that actually that's more important than mm-hmm. the physical side of it. But at the same time, it's also the hardest part. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the hardest part people have is the motivation, finding the motivation to do the right things. A lot of people know what to do, exercise and eat healthy. They just don't know how to start it or maintain it over a long period of time. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the battle that we have with the big issue, if you look at it from the whole perspective as a country, is looking at it from that perspective. Is we most of us know what to do, you know, the physical side of it, but we don't know how to overcome the mental and emotional side of it. And, you know, I talk about in my book, the most important things are to have a support system, family, friends, or an online community, and to publicly declare your intention or your goals so that you have that support system in place. Because if you try and do this by yourself, you're going to lack motivation at one point or another. You're going to hit a plateau, whether physical or mental plateau, and you're going to want to give in to the temptations, the cravings, no matter who you are. Even if you're someone like me who had only lived that way for 6 months, I had those same issues losing the weight. But because I had a support system, I had people following me online, and my wife and family and friends, the eyes were on me, it kept me accountable. Even though I wanted my Mountain Dew or my Cinnamon Toast Crunch at times, you have to have those things in place in order to make this more long term rather than just another diet.
In fact, you make an analogy, right, to John F. Kennedy's setting the goal for the nation.
Yes, great example.
We want a man on the moon, and I'm not sure how many years away he was, but it was within the decade, so it was less than 10 years.
Yes.
And so you say that public declaration, getting those family and friends on board in a public way is crucially important.
Yes, and I think that was a great example, showing people that, yeah, at the time when he announced that, I'm sure some people laughed or thought that it was impossible. But because he announced that publicly, I really do feel that that kept him and the people that were working on it accountable to do their jobs so that his goal would be accomplished. And it's the same for us. I think I don't think you need to go out and start a blog like I did and do all that, but I think it's good to have your close friends or family, those who will give you a balance of encouragement and belief, but also a kick in the pants and honesty when you need it, when you're going to be weak, because there are going to be times when you're going to want to give up. And that's why you have to have that balance of from that support system, and you have to have people publicly know what you're doing so they can say, hey, you know, why are you drinking that Mountain Dew? Shouldn't you be, you know, drinking some water instead?
Right.
Which can be annoying, of course, but at the same time, you'll be thankful for it if you have people doing that for you.
Mm-hmm. By the way, you mentioned Mountain Dew, and I think it's
yes.
The other one that was especially hard for you to give up was Cinnamon
Toast Crunch.
Toast Crunch.
Yes.
Those
delicious.
Were
very delicious.
Those were the very two hardest. And I think you were surprised by how hard that
very
was.
Very hard. I mean, honestly, it was hell going from the transition of having Mountain Dew twice a day and Cinnamon Toast Crunch mostly twice a day to not having it anymore. And yeah, for me, I did it cold turkey. For some people, they might need to wean themselves off of it. But because I did it cold turkey, yes, I went through withdrawals where I had the headaches, the grumpiness, the moodiness. And that made me realize that, okay, my clients weren't just weak because they couldn't give up their cereal or their soda. I knew how hard it was, for me at least, to let go of those foods. And if I didn't have that accountability, if I was doing this all by myself, I think I would have given in, because it's very powerful, food addiction, and it is real. And I understand that, and I get that now.
And you gained 75 pounds. You said it wasn't a fast food diet. Mm-hmm. It was just on the regular consumer diet that we as Americans have in front of us every day. So I expect you would find that a problem. It's the whole thing, right? The advertising, the what foods are available just readily.
Yes.
Does that need to change, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I would love to see some changes, but at the same time, I don't want it to overstep boundaries where we're limiting people's choices, saying you can't have this at all. But I talk about in my book how to overcome that temptation, because that temptation is always going to be there. I mean, the advertising, the way they package it, advertise or commercialize it and make it so available and convenient. And the food does taste good. I mean, that's the thing. It does taste really good, and I'm not going to deny that. But if you're not prepared, then you're going to give in to those temptations. So that's why I talk about my book, preparing your meals in advance and knowing exactly what you're going to eat and when you're going to eat it. Because if you work all day and you're hungry and you haven't prepared your meal, it's so easy and convenient just to get a $5 pizza on the way home that tastes delicious. Mm-hmm. But I talk about how we prepare our meals. Sunday nights, we cook for about an hour, our meals for the next 3 days or so. And then Wednesday night, we do the same thing so that we know, okay, this is what we're going to eat for the next 3 days, because it's a convenience thing. We know that we will come home from work or a hard day, and if we have our meals there in front of us that we cooked already, we're going to eat that rather than go out of our way to order fast food or a pizza, and it helps you achieve your goals.
Do your kids go along with this? Sometimes kids can be pretty picky eaters.
That's very true. Luckily, I have a 2-year-old and a 1-year-old, so I can form their habits right now for them. But
start early enough.
Yeah, what I did was when I was gaining the weight, for example, I would purposely make 2 meals every night, my SpaghettiOs or my macaroni and cheese for me, and then a healthy dinner for my wife and my 2-year-old. Because I didn't want her to develop those habits. It's not that we don't feed her those foods every once in a while. We definitely have a balance in our household where, you know, we'll give her treats or we'll have those foods every once in a while. But yes, as with kids, it's very, very tough. And I'm okay with, I think a great strategy for that is scheduling breaks where you say, okay, today we're going to have what you guys want. We're going to make something delicious. And, you know, I have a friend who calls it soda pop Sunday or Saturday, whatever, and they can have some soda and they can have some of those foods that we wouldn't want them to have every day on that one day, so that they know it's that kind of celebratory day where they can have those foods. But then the other days of the week, you know, you'll get them to eat hopefully the foods that you would want them to. And it's different for each family and each situation. But those are some things that I've noticed to help people with kids that are a little bit older, that they're just starting to trying to change their habits, which is very tough. So it's always going to be a battle, but it's about preparation, I think, is the key.
We're talking with Drew Manning on Access Utah today. He, at the time, was a medical technician and part-time personal trainer. Decided he needed to empathize with the people he was training, and so he, on purpose, gained 75 pounds. Then he's lost it. The book is Fit to Fat to Fit, and that's the website as well. There's a blog, the subtitle, The Unexpected Lessons from Gaining and Losing 75 Pounds on Purpose. And Drew Manning says it's not just physical, it's emotional and mental, and he learned more about that, which he now uses as a full-time trainer and keeper of this website and blog, this community. And he'll be giving a book signing and talk at Barnes & Noble Bookstore in Sandy. That's at 5 o'clock this afternoon. Drew Manning, our guest for another 7 or 8 minutes on Access Utah today. You're right. I want to take you back to the middle of the experiment.
Uh-huh.
And you write that you were seriously afraid that you wouldn't be able to take it all off. You knew you'd be able to take some of it, most of it. But I guess your fear was your lifestyle would have changed in fundamental ways from where you were before. How do you deal with those fears?
Yeah, so, yes, I was afraid because I didn't think I'd gain that much weight. First of all, I thought I would gain 50 to 60 pounds. And I was afraid of letting go of the foods that I felt like I'd become addicted to. And to go back in the gym now as, instead of the fit guy, I was now the fat guy. And actually the first month, I should probably clarify, I didn't do any exercise the first month. I just focused on nutrition because that, to me, that's the most important part of the physical aspect is your nutrition more so than exercise. So I wanted to show people that was essential. And so I just changed my diet that first month. I didn't do any exercises. I didn't go to the gym. And lost 19 pounds that first month just from what I ate. So, and then the next month I started going back to the gym. And yes, I was nervous for the first time going back to the gym. I used to be very confident in the gym because I knew what I was doing. I had that strength and endurance. And now going back, I definitely was nervous and I was scared because I knew how hard the workouts were going to be. And I know some of my clients wish they could be there for that first workout telling me what to do and telling me to do more push-ups. But it honestly was a very humbling experience going back there and struggling, doing push-ups on my knees and struggling on the assisted pull-up machine. I definitely was humbled. I think people would love to see like a Jillian Michaels or Bob Harper, 75 pounds overweight, going back to the gym and having someone yell at them, right? But honestly, yes, I did have to overcome that fear of going back to the gym. But knowing that there were people following me and they were keeping me accountable helped me to overcome that fear, saying to myself, I have to do this. You know, it was that pressure. And I think that is motivating for some people. For other people, it might make them shut down, so they might need a different approach. So yeah, that's what helped me out.
And in fact, this you do write, the community is very important.
Yeah.
You see this, your effort as a community effort, right?
Mm-hmm.
Including when you were getting fat. Was this true? People would send you treats?
Yes.
People
would send me treats. This baker at this local bakery sent me a whole cheesecake. And I would get treats from people all the time. As I was gaining the weight, which I was okay with because it was all fun and doing that. So,
And then what about on the other side of it? When people obviously knew now's the time when Drew is losing the weight, what was the response from the community?
There was no cheesecake sent to me, luckily.
That's good.
Or Mountain Dew. People were pretty respectful of it. You know, I mean, when we would go out in public, like they knew that I had to eat a certain meal. And that was the thing is my meal plans were posted online. So people could say, hey, you're supposed to be eating this right now, rather than, you know, a cheesecake or some cereal. So that helped to keep me accountable as well, because I posted exactly what I ate for every meal of every day on this journey back, so people could have full access to that and follow it. And I broke it out for men and for women too, so women followers could have a meal plan too. And that helped to keep me accountable too, knowing or knowing that other people knew what I was supposed to be eating.
And I imagine that helped you. Probably held you more accountable than a lot of people, because you had an even bigger community.
Exactly. Yeah.
Holding you accountable and giving you encouragement.
Yes, exactly. So for me, it was a little bit different. But for someone, I mean, they could have this on the through some Facebook friends or Twitter or even YouTube, a YouTube channel where people are checking in on them, or you know, an online forum, like on my forum on my website. They can go on there and share their story and motivate and give support and receive support as well. So not to the same scale as me, where I had people out in public who knew who I was sometimes. But still, for me, I felt like that was very motivating.
And how has this changed you then as a personal trainer? That's why you set out to do this.
Yeah. So this is the biggest thing that I took away. The biggest lesson that I learned from Fit to Fat to Fit is that it's not just about the physical side of it, the meal plans, the exercises. No matter what fitness program you're on, whether you follow this program, which is great, or P90X or Weight Watchers, there's a lot of great programs out there. The key is, if you don't understand the mental and emotional issues and how to overcome them, no matter what program you're doing, it's just going to be another diet if you focus just on the physical, which is the exercises, how to exercise, how to eat. That's only one side of it. The key to making it a true lifestyle, which is what I'm trying to get people to embrace, is to know how to overcome those mental and emotional challenges. And that's the biggest issue we have in our country. And if I could say to people that are really struggling with motivation, is I would say that to them, because a lot of people know what to do, right? They just lack that initial motivation to get started, is that you're worth it. You are worth making this true lifestyle change.
And how has this changed you as a person? Your wife writes that this was a family. This whole family thing, it changed the family.
Yeah, you could look at this me now and look at me a year ago and say, from a physical standpoint, you're the same person. But on the inside, mentally, emotionally, psychologically, my personality, I'm a different man on the inside. My wife likes to say I'm more humanized now, whereas before I was really militant about and very strict about certain things. And now I feel like, having been overweight and for myself, understanding the psychological side of it, I feel I have a better understanding. I'm not that judgmental person that I used to be. I feel like I can look at someone's story and not focus just on the size of their waist. And now, like I said before, my biggest thing is trying to help people focus on becoming medically healthy, not so much on their weight, their scale weight. That's not the best measure of success when it comes to being healthy.
And what's your goal going forward with Fit to Fat to Fit?
Right now, my focus is the book and the website, which I continue to write blogs and spotlight my followers from all over the world, because those stories are very inspiring. I will be creating an online fitness platform where people can subscribe to receive customized meal plans and workouts. So rather than those 6 months of meal plans and workouts, which are free, will stay on there. But if someone wants something customized to them and their specific needs, there will be an online fitness platform with videos of me, with coaches and webinars that I'm developing that right now, and it'll be available soon. And I have also had the opportunity to work with a scientist and a formulator to create my own line of 100% all-natural supplements with no synthetics or fillers, which I am very proud of, and I have launched those as well.
And it continues to be a community, right?
Yes, a community of people where we are supporting each other and helping others achieve their fitness goals and making it a lifestyle.
And the website is fittofattofit.com. The book is Fit to Fat to Fit, The Unexpected Lessons from Gaining and Losing 75 Pounds on Purpose. Drew Manning is doing this full time now, and he lives in the Salt Lake City area. It's been a pleasure to have you on the program, Drew Manning.
Thanks for having me on.
More information, of course, at that website, and the book has the meal plans and the exercises as well, even more on the website. Yep. Thanks for coming in.
Appreciate it.
Access Utah is a production of Utah Public Radio. You can listen to this episode or previous episodes of Access Utah anytime at upr.org, where you can find a link to subscribe to our podcast. This is Utah Public Radio, KUSR HD1 89.5 Logan, KUSK HD1 88.5 Vernal, KUSL HD1 89.3 Richfield, KUST HD1 88.7 Moab, and KUSU FM HD1 91.5 Logan.
Thank you for listening to Utah Public Radio. Right now in our studios in Logan, the temperature is 55 degrees. This is Addison Pace, and the time is now 10 o'clock.
It's the Splendid Table from APM American Public.